What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The headline: China says it is firmly against U.S. unilateral sanctions against Iran as Tehran and Beijing begin implementing a major agreement. No let-up in tensions between Russia and the West. Moscow rejects U.S. allegations that it is seeking a false flag operation to invade Ukraine. And Iraqi media say several drones have targeted a military base housing U.S. troops in the central part of the country. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. China once again voices its firm opposition to unilateral sanctions imposed by the United States against Iran. Foreign Minister Wang Yi says the U.S. is using its sanctions and political manipulation to interfere in Iran's internal affairs. Wang voices support for the ongoing efforts in Vienna to restore the 2015 deal from which the U.S. withdrew and reimposed sanctions on Iran. He says the U.S. is primarily responsible for all the troubles around the tattered agreement. The top Chinese diplomat made the comments as he hosted his Iranian counterpart, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, in the city of Wuxi on Friday.
This is the first time Hossein Amir Abdullahian is visiting China as Iran's foreign minister. The one-day trip came upon an invitation by his Chinese counterpart, Wang Yi. The visit marked the beginning of the implementation of the much-anticipated Sino-Iranian pact known as the 25-year strategic partnership.
In this trip, we agreed to start implementing the 25-year comprehensive strategic cooperation agreement. I also delivered a written message from our president to his Chinese counterpart, Mr. Xi, to implement the agreement.
The Sino-Iranian Comprehensive Strategic Partnership was announced in a joint statement during a visit by Chinese President Xi Jinping to Iran in 2016. In 2020, Wang Yi and then-Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif signed the pact in Tehran. So far, no detailed information has been revealed from the agreement, but the two sides say it covers economic, political, and security areas.
During today's meeting, we talked about industrial, scientific, technological, and economic areas, as well as tourism and other subjects that are covered by the 25-year agreement.
During the talks, China also reiterated its support for Iran's nuclear rights in the ongoing Vienna talks, aimed at removing U.S. sanctions, which Washington reinstated against Iran in 2018 after it unilaterally left the 2015 deal. As signatories to the accord, China and Russia both urged Washington to remove the sanctions as the only path to rejoin the deal.
Today, we extensively discussed the Vienna talks over the removal of U.S. sanctions on Iran. China's representative in Vienna, along with his Russian counterpart, plays a positive part in advocating Iran's nuclear rights and the removal of the anti-Iran sanctions.
China is Iran's number one trade partner. This partnership heavily relies on Iran's oil supply to energy-hungry China. Reports show that in 2021, and despite U.S. oil embargoes on Iran, China tripled its oil imports from Iran. Now the implementation of the new pact will guarantee the flow of Iran's oil to China and cement the two sides' trade ties. It goes without saying that China and Iran are strategic partners in every sense, and the top Iranian diplomat's trip is a sign that Iran is determined to keep that path with Beijing. The two sides are expected to engage even more as the 25-year strategic partnership has moved from paper to practice. Yusuf Jalali from the Chinese city of Wuxi.
To discuss that further, we're joined by Einar Tang, an economic and political affairs commentator who is joining us from Beijing. Thank you very much, Mr. Tang. And if you could please tell us how significant this agreement is.
Well, I think in geopolitical terms, the U.S. is now involved in multiple fronts, in Ukraine with Russia, Taiwan with China, and then also on this JCPOA issue with Iran. So at this juncture, it's not credible that the U.S. can kind of push its way around on all of these areas. For Iran, it represents an opportunity to return to somewhat normal. But at this juncture, Biden is wallowed down in his domestic political issues, does not seem to have the leadership to do anything dramatic.
So, Mr. Tangen, this is a 25-year pact between Tehran and Beijing. So it is pretty much long-term. How do you think it can affect the political equations of the region?
Well, I don't, China is not looking to choose sides. Quite frankly, what they want to do is see a stabilized Middle East. China is a huge importer of oil, not only from Iran, but from other Middle Eastern countries. So they would like to see as much stability as possible. The Chinese equation for this is trade. They want to trade desperately with all of these countries, as I said, not taking sides, but simply putting this in economic terms. For Iran, I think it's very important. Iran has been isolated by the U.S. Having Russia and China on its side is a balancing factor. No one knows exactly where the Europeans are going to end up on this. So having that outlet for investment to improve infrastructure is really, really important to Iran at this juncture.
It's good that you mentioned that, Mr. Tangen. As a final question, I'd like to ask, considering the economic sanctions against Iran and Europe and the West basically trying to isolate Iran, how far do you think China will stick by this pact when it comes to the economic sanctions particularly?
Well, China's increased its oil drawdown, I mean, oil trade with Iran by three times during the last year. I don't think that China is as worried as it used to be about trying to mend fences with the U.S., given what's happening there, this recent defense budget, which makes it very clear that the U.S. has an encirclement campaign actively underway. Under such circumstances, China is, I think, has determined that it's going to go its own way. Its own way is things like RCEP, Belt and Road Initiative, trade with countries that are willing to trade, including Iran. I think it's very important for the world order to put a lot of these ideas about how we are different aside and let each nation, which is sovereign, decide on their path to prosperity without outside interference.
Well, thank you very much for your comments, so Mr. Einar Tang, an economic and political affairs commentator from Beijing. Now, Iran says the United States' cruel and unilateral sanctions are to blame for the suspension of its voting rights in the United Nations General Assembly. Iran's UN Ambassador Majid Tahrirabanchi says Iran is facing difficulties to pay its UN membership fee for the second straight year due to the sanctions. Tahrirabanchi says the restrictions are not just impeding Iran's access to humanitarian items, medicine and medical equipment. He says the bans are also impeding the UN's work. The envoy says Iran is working to find a safe financial channel to pay its UN membership fee and reclaim its voting rights. To discuss that further, we're joined by John Bosnich, a journalist, activist, and political analyst who is joining us live right now from Belgrade. Thank you very much, Mr. Bosnich, for joining us. If you could please tell us, how does this all make sense? On the one hand, we have the U.S. imposing sanctions on Iran and then expecting it to pay certain fees, for example, like the U.N. Fees that Iran was supposed to pay.
Well, one could say that it makes sense from the perspective of the United States, and that's the only way it could make any sense. The unilateral sanctions of the United States and some of its allies against Iran are a pressure tactic designed to force Iran to its knees. And this pressure tactic is applied across all aspects of Iran's operations as a state and its international affairs. So what we can say is that the United States pressure tactics, which are illegal unilateral sanctions, are having an effect of disrupting Iran's ability to pay its international fees to bodies like the United Nations. However, it also has to be said that the United Nations itself has done nothing to protect Iran from the open and outward threats of war from the United States and from Israel. So Iran is in a situation here where it attempts to maintain its international voice, but that voice is having very little effect at the United Nations, where the United States appears to be dictating the terms to everyone.
Thank you very much for your comments, Mr. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us live from Belgrade. And tensions remain high between Russia and the U.S. over Ukraine. Washington again accuses Moscow of seeking a pretext to invade its neighbor, an allegation Russia vehemently denies. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says the allegations are unsubstantiated and not backed by evidence. On Friday, the U.S. said Russia has already prepositioned a group of operatives who conduct a false flag operation in eastern Ukraine, and that is to lay the groundwork for invasion. For weeks now, the U.S. and the Western military alliance NATO have been accusing Russia of intending to attack Ukraine, and that has raised tensions with Moscow, which is unhappy with increased military activity by NATO near its borders. Russia says NATO expansion further east threatens the country's security. Russian soldiers are flying back home from Kazakhstan, where they helped restore calm following days of unprecedented protests. Withdrawal of the Russian troops is expected to be completed by Wednesday. Russian forces are part of a military alliance of ex-Soviet states that were sent to the Central Asian country on a peacekeeping operation. A sudden increase of fuel prices sparked public protests in Kazakhstan. The rallies spiraled out of control and quickly turned bloody. President Kasym Tokayev asked for and urged assistance from the Russian-led bloc to contain what he called foreign-sponsored terrorism. During the 10-day unrest, nearly 10,000 people were arrested and dozens killed, including protesters and police. Now, Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov has addressed both Russian and foreign journalists in his annual press conference in Moscow. He touched upon several issues, including the developments in Kazakhstan and growing tensions with the West near the Ukrainian border. We have a report from the Russian capital.
At a press conference in Moscow, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov touched not only on negotiations with the West, but also the peacekeeping operation in Kazakhstan and the upcoming meeting of the presidents of Iran and Russia.
The visit, in short, is very important. It's time to resume contacts at the highest level, which are traditionally close and regular among us, and which also fell victim to the coronavirus infection. The significance of the visit, first of all, is the need to take an inventory of our entire agenda, taking into account considering the new government in Iran.
Lavrov added that Moscow is in favor of holding a conference on security in the Persian Gulf, where it would be possible to discuss the claims accumulated both by Iran against its Arab neighbors and by its Arab neighbors against the Islamic Republic.
Such forum can unite Iranians and Arabs. Each of the parties would put their concerns on the table. They would also talk about their concerns over Yemen, Syria, Iraq, and other volatile areas that somehow cause controversy between other countries.
Regarding relations with the West, Russia has come up with offers of security guarantees as its patience has run out. Moscow is waiting for the West to give a concrete and written answer to its initiative and is not going to wait indefinitely. Last month, Russia's foreign ministry published draft security proposals between Moscow and Washington on ensuring the security of Russia and NATO member states. Consultations on these issues were held on January 10th in Geneva, a session of the NATO-Russia Council was held on January 12th in Brussels, and a meeting of the OSCE Permanent Council took place on January 13th in Vienna.
The appearance of NATO on the Russian borders is categorically unacceptable. This is a real red line. The appearance of U.S. weapons and military bases there on the Sea of Azov is the second red line. It simply reflects the West's overreach, and to put it bluntly, in violation of all obligations, in violation of common sense.
Lavrov said NATO had come ever closer to Russia's borders during five waves of expansion starting 1997, when it formalized its relations with NATO. The diplomat said it absolutely cannot suit Russia when it is required to send troops to barracks on its territory, while at the same time the Americans, the Canadians and the British are building bases in Ukraine and the Black Sea region.
Russia's efforts to strengthen ties with its neighbors demonstrate differences between the CSTO and NATO. Russia and its allies leave countries at the end of military missions, thus establishing strategic partnerships. And regarding unfriendly policies adopted by Western governments towards Russia, Moscow advocates for constructive dialogue and mutual respect. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
A new attack on U.S.-led foreign forces based in Iraq, this time in Salahuddin province north of the capital, Baghdad. Iraqi media quoting security officials say a drone attack hit Balad Air Base housing U.S.-led forces. The attack caused fire in some parts of the base, but the extent of the damage is not clear yet. Still, no claims of responsibility. Now, that is the latest in attacks targeting American forces and their bases in Iraq in recent weeks. On Thursday, three Katyusha rockets hit the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad's fortified Green Zone. All of these are happening as the U.S. is facing growing calls in Iraq to leave. Those calls began after the U.S. assassinated top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in January 2020. Now that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
You. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Muhammad Iqbal, also famously known as Allama Iqbal, was a famous poet, philosopher, lawyer, and politician. Muhammad Iqbal is called the spiritual father of Pakistan, as he is believed to be the inspiration behind the historical Pakistan movement, in which he was one of the few leaders who first conceived the idea of Pakistan as a different nation for the Muslims. Iqbal is Pakistan's national poet, and his birthday is a public holiday in Pakistan. Muhammad Iqbal, also known as Iqbal Lahori, is considered one of the most important figures in Urdu literature, with literary work in both the Urdu and Persian languages. Although Urdu poetry draws heavily on Persian idiom and imagery, Iqbal found Persian more suited to his thought and temperament, and a better means of communication to a wider audience in the Indian subcontinent as well as other countries of the Muslim world. At the end, more than half and nearly two-thirds of Iqbal's poetry was in Persian language. Stay with us as this week's program looks into this extraordinary man's life and legacy.
The fragrance of the companion shall take a nation to the companion. Sometimes childhood memories appear before my eyes like a pale pall of imagination. Among those rippling images there sails the craft of my thought towards the shore of silence, to anchor in the harbor of its own. I dwell on my existence. I want to decipher the oriental thoughts and secrets, and to put an end to my bewilderment and self-alienation. I am a traveler, standing on the shore of thoughts. My aim, to pinpoint my lost identity. I am a traveler, walking on the road of human thoughts. My destination is the land of belief in oneself, in a bid to revive an identity which might no longer exist. It is an identity which, like a child's toy, is played with, but in a deadly way.
Some ignorant guys sent to the slaughterhouse of death every day thousands of innocent people because they are deeply buried in the marsh of their jejun ideas. In a way, there are two types of travels, a physical one, or going from one place to another, and a spiritual one, or transforming from one mood to another. Those embarking on the first type are many in number, and those embarking on the second type are much less. My travel is a mixture of both. Within the land and the sky, a travel in time to appreciate the ideas of an Eastern philosopher, namely Allama Muhammad Iqbal, the thinker, that if his thoughts were well understood, we would not witness the ignorant behaviors by Takfiri groups that are far from Islamic injunctions and humanity these days. Allama Iqbal wrote great mysteries in his books for his son, Javed Iqbal, and all others. As an old man, Javed knows it well whom his father was addressing. Javed talks to him like this.
Right now, I am 90 years old. You don't address people of my age. You address young people. You like them to believe what I say. I personally cannot fully understand you. I follow a path not wanted by you. Talk to me, who is 90 years old. You feel the elderly usually talk in a desperate way. You advise that one should not be desperate. The right man is hidden in you. Go on with your search. He will surely appear. You are saying the same thing. You have not visited me. I did my best. I searched for 90 years, but I did not find that right man. Where is he then? Tell me if you know.
I begin my journey right from here to the city of Sialkot, the birthplace of Iqbal. Perhaps in this travel, I would be able to show some special features of that righteous man. Today, Sialkot is a city in Punjab, Pakistan. The city, when Iqbal was born, was part of India.
Oh, you who are familiar with me, come with me to the childhood alleys. Tread on memory's pathway. Come with me to my intimate's alley. In my childhood home, on roofs quite stranger to all noises. May they be merrily remembered. The period of harmony with existence and excellence. The pleasant period of being with a companion, with all its liveliness. During all the year's generous moments, those alleys full of love, the splash of pure wafers.
ये वो घर है जहाँ अल्लामा इकबाल 9 November 1877 को सुबह 5.
Here is the very room wherein Iqbal was born on the 9th of November 1877 at 5:14 a.m.
उन्होंने इस घर की इब्तिदा की.
The house here was built by his grandfather, Sheikh Muhammad Rafi. He was the first to occupy the house. On the 6th of February 1861, he bought three small rooms and a house near here until Iqbal was born. Later, Iqbal's elder brother came here. The house has undergone no change since then.
Iqbal's ancestors were high-ranking Brahmins of Kashmir. They converted to Islam 500 years before Iqbal was born. The family was called Separu, meaning educated. His father was a cloth dealer. Nur Muhammad's shop was frequented by great thinkers of Islamic sects. His mother, Imam Bibi, was also a religious woman. Iqbal had one brother and four sisters, all of them his senior.
Rooms were built before anything else in 1861. Iqbal's family prepared the first room for the wives. There, in that room, you see a cradle and a chair.
Encouraged by his father, Muhammad Iqbal learned the Quran from his very childhood in Hisamuddin Mosque of Kashmiris. Basic lessons were learned at home, as Iqbal says this was the best period of his lifetime, because under his father's support, his thinking foundations became established. Sialkot's graveyard tells years later, when his father died, the story of Iqbal's attachment.
so many times I've asked myself, what is existence? From where does it take root? What a secret it is that has attracted thinkers' attention. I could not find answers to those questions. Then, many years later, when my thoughts expanded, I traveled back to my childhood to find answers to my questions. There it was my father who decided on the shape a thing should take. Years later, when unknown things became clear to me, I came to understand Mir Hassan's teachings. He talked to me about the Book of Life, but he did not mention the book's title. A condition set before me by him was this: to learn new sciences, Europeans learn. It is only then that you come to know what the value of the Book of Life is. He was quite right. Years later, with all my heart, I came to fully know the Book of Life. The Book of Life, the Holy Quran, whose wisdom is eternal and solid. It is an illustration for life secrets. Its power makes the unfaithful faithful. To mankind, it is the only message. The bearer of it will enjoy the mercy of both worlds. Bandits turn into leaders just through its memorization. They become pious just with the help of this very book. He whose heart's pulsation is a result of the book's warmth, his restless way finds comfort just as does a pearl. Should you want to live a Muslim life, only through the Quran is this possible.
Sialkot, a city in northeastern Punjab province, located at the foot of the snow-clad Kashmiri mountain. It was here, in this crowded city, where Allama Iqbal's first educational basis took root. Having received his first training by father and such a great teacher as Maulana Mir Hassan, the young Muhammad entered Scotch Mission School to start his official education therein. The school's premises, against passage of centuries, keeps the same shape as it used to have.
He finished his high school here in 1891. Then in 1893, he completed his 10th grade. And it was here where he finally ended his high school education in 1895 and got his high school diploma.
Having finished his high school in Sialkot, Muhammad Iqbal found the city too small to give him an opportunity to fly higher up in the sky. Muhammad was 18 when he finished his pre-university courses with honors, receiving 2 academic gold medals. Admitted on a scholarship, he left Sialkot for Lahore as advised by his teacher Mir Hassan. Lahore was a city southwest of his birthplace, 125 kilometers away from it. Then Muhammad Iqbal went to Punjab University, one of Pakistan's oldest universities, established in 1882 by the British ruler of the Indian subcontinent in Lahore. There, the instruction language was English, though some lessons were taught in Urdu. Young Iqbal of Sialkot went there to continue his education. Very soon, he got so famous throughout the world due to his thoughts and his Persian Urdu poems. Known as Iqbal Lahori, he was destined to get his BA and MA here and composed his earliest poems.
Allama Iqbal bila shuba hamari islami duniya ka.
Undoubtedly, Iqbal is, for us in the world of Islam, a clear metaphor and a great name. Iqbal found an Islamic world, a special thought. At the present time, we are living in a place so blessed as it witnessed Iqbal, the learned, for 5 years. At a time when Iqbal arrived here from Sialkot to enroll for BA, the state university here had this one dormitory only. Iqbal lived here for 5 years. I mean, his presence here lasted about 5 years. He then enrolled for MA in philosophy. He completed his MA.
Iqbal, as it seems to me, went through two periods in his life, a wisdom period and a love period.
During the time Iqbal was still in the subcontinent, and when he had not yet left for the West, he was naturally well acquainted with Western philosophy, had deeply studied Hinduism and Islamic thoughts.
At that time, Iqbal was quite familiar with Indian mysticism, and the traces of that school of thought can be found in his poems.
He studied in depth our religion, and with such a deep knowledge, he left for the West.
There was no ending to the stories of my restlessness and abandoning similar places. I was 28 when recommended by my teacher, Sir Thomas Arnold, I left for Europe to continue my studies. Having a master's degree in philosophy, I had taught at the Oriental College, but going to England and starting study at Cambridge University for a doctorate in philosophy changed everything. Studying at Cambridge secured me opportunities to know better and more about Western philosophers. At the same time, I enrolled at the Faculty of Law to be able to get permission to act as attorney. The rest had no meaning to me. For that very year, I traveled to Hamburg, Germany, to do more research and finish my doctoral dissertation. For a whole year, I worked so hard to get fully familiar with philosophical foundations and to get my doctoral thesis finished. At that time, I made much of well-known philosophy teachers, such as the famous professor of philosophy, Max Nagrad, and the famous Orientalist, Reinhold Elin Nicholson.
He continued his university studies in Heidelberg, Germany, and became familiar with the thoughts and ideas of such philosophers as Nietzsche, Fichte, Schopenhauer, and the like. There were similarities between his thoughts and the thoughts of those learned men.
Iqbal continues to say that he was changing and thinking those days.
Interestingly enough, Iqbal was influenced by Western philosophers. He adopted their thoughts and opinions. He received ideas from them, but mixed them with his own to create an independent thought system and called it own philosophy.
Having received his doctor of philosophy, Iqbal returned at the age of 31 to Lahore. Never did he hesitate to return home, contrary to some students of that time. He left England quickly. He was then licensed to practice attorneyship and became a member of Lahore Bar Association. 3 years later, he became a lecturer in philosophy at Lahore University. He resigned after a while to exclusively practice as an attorney. This way, he was able to freely publish his thoughts. He continuously thought about finding a way to awaken Muslims taken captive by colonialism.
All my life has been coincident with the Indian subcontinent's darkest days. British colonialism and now World War I. India was dominated by colonialism since the 18th century. But as World War I began in August 1914, a new form of cruelty began to cover my land. Indians went to fight a war wherein they had played no role. They were killed and killed for people who themselves were the main factor in bringing ruin and destruction to the whole world. Description of troubles brought about by those calamities is actually impossible.
In 1910 and 1911, and after World War I, we see a number of liberation movements. Muslims rose against British and European colonizers. So Iqbal found himself on a well-defined route. He started composing revolutionary poems.
After World War I, in 1918, and the fall of the Ottoman Empire, something had to be done quickly to save people of the tyranny imposed on them. I knew that a worldwide caliphate was no longer practicable. There was no agreement between Islamic unity and blind religious prejudice or extreme nationalistic ideas as promulgated by colonial powers. Unwillingly, I engaged in political activities. I tried to raise public awareness to bring about self-reliance.
Allama ran for Punjab Parliament election. As he said, he hated political activities and Muslims' needs forced him to enter the political arena. Consequently, he joined the Muslim League Party. He succeeded to become an MP for Punjab province for 3 years. During that time, he tried to solve Muslims' problems. Iqbal used to talk on such problems.
Allama Iqbal nurtured the wish for an independent Pakistan. He would say a new country, an Islamic country, would come into existence on the world map. The country's name, he would say, will be Pakistan. Iqbal did not give this name to a new country, but surely he had it as a Muslim country in mind.
During my lifetime, I liked those sleeping in the world of thought to wake up from their deep sleep. But sadly, the sleep is too deep. Therefore, I took refuge in the world of rhythmic words and meaningful poems to awaken the youths of this sorrowful nation in order to sail the craft of our thoughts to the shore of productivity. I was a young man when I found out that to weather horrible tempests and the enemy's lurking place, we had no way but recourse to the miracle of the last time. The Holy Quran, the book with miraculous words, which can be used as the best means to awaken thought and exalt the belief in self. The book is most succoring, particularly to the youth. I, who despair of the sages of old, have a word to say touching the day to come. Render my speech easy unto the young. Make my abyss for them attainable.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. The most important element in happiness and the most exalted characteristic that man can enjoy is perfection. Good moral traits are like jewels or ornaments which serve to beautify a person. The spiritual jewel grants life greatness and authenticity and guides man to the peak of honor and dignity. All men are humanly equal, yet they vary and differ just as their ability to reason and think do. Man's spiritual habits and behavioral characteristics also differ. The characteristics of a person are all that which distinguishes individuals from each other and define everyone's abilities and social positions. The human character directly influences us more than any other factor. Dear brothers and sisters, man was placed in this universe to endeavor to develop his capabilities, to perfect himself, and widen the horizons of his thinking. He should endeavor to improve his knowledge and strengthen his spirit in order to achieve perfection. Perfection is the whole and sole objective of man's life. Perfection is the goal for which we were created. Some people wonder as to what the goals or the goal of life is. To be honest, perfection is, according to Muslim scholars, is the whole and sole goal of life. We have been created to perfect ourselves. We have been created to perfect our morals. We have been created to perfect ourselves so that we can achieve proximity to Allah. We cannot achieve proximity and we cannot achieve closeness to Allah without achieving perfection. So perfection is an essential requirement that must be obtained, that must be achieved if we are going to achieve proximity to Allah. And of course, the more we achieve perfection, the closer we are to Allah. Dear brothers and sisters, man is supposed to endeavor in this world to qualify himself for the fulfillment of his specific duties. He was not created to remain or to be idle, you know. He is created to fulfill certain duties. And his duties are clear. They are outlined in the Quran and also in the prophetic tradition. Now, having said that, it is the responsibility of every individual to establish a healthy and honest personality and to work in the path of happiness. Now, we should understand also that happiness, that prosperity, that salvation, these are not achieved unless we fulfill our duties. Those duties that have been outlined and fixed and that have been prescribed by Allah. We have to work hard to achieve those goals. We have to work hard to attain perfection. The harder man works in this path, the more he realizes the true meaning of success. The closer he gets to perfection, and the sooner he achieves the success that he is looking forward to achieve. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with guess it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
There is nothing more capable of giving him the strength to venture into the rough sea of life than healthy personality. Dear brothers and sisters, when we speak of healthy personality, we do not mean a healthy food or a healthy diet or something like that. A healthy personality is a personality that gathers noble traits, noble attributes, sublime or lofty characteristics and lofty attributes. A reasonable individual is able to create an enjoyable living for himself, even if he is secluded. On the other hand, an ignorant person cannot rid himself of laziness, although he could have all the luxuries of life even if he were to spend large sums of money to do so. Reason, management, and the ability to be affectionate are among the vital factors which bring man closer to reaching the goal of his life and open the gates of happiness towards him. It's our duty to give special importance to the development of these factors more than the development of material gains. All characteristics and habits share a position in deciding man's future, and every thought and feeling greatly affects these characteristics and habits. It is obviously notable to mention that the manners and conduct of every person are constantly changing towards perfection or otherwise, you know. The first steps towards developing and perfecting the personality is to learn the methods of exploiting the hidden powers and capabilities of oneself. God has given us certain capabilities. God has granted us capacities and potentials which we can use to achieve perfection, to develop ourselves and to perfect our personality. Man obviously can then purify himself from all lowliness. Man has the potential and the ability to consciously do all these things, to eradicate bad or evil traits and to purify himself, because a man is a moral agent, a man is a conscious agent, man is a volitional agent that is able to decide for himself what to do and what not to do. And this is differentiates him from other creatures, from other animals, from other beings. Of course, this is one of the things which, you know, distinguishes man from other animals. And actions hold no real value unless they stem from the depth of one's own existence. Words manifest the holdings of the mind. It is as if they were translations of the otherwise hidden secrets therein. When words contradict one's actions, this speaks of an unstable personality, and consequently, his devastating effects. And consequently, these words have devastating effects on the individual's life. So, to conclude, I would say that it is very much important for an individual to establish good habits, to develop good habits, and these habits and these characteristics cannot be achieved and cannot be developed unless one has a firm mind towards establishing them and towards achieving them. Otherwise, if he is lazy, if he is lethargic, obviously he will not achieve any of those goals. He will not achieve perfection, and he will suffer miseries. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.